Hi, I'm Paul Pachter, President and CEO of Long Island Cares, the Harry Chapin Regional Food Bank, and welcome back to another episode of Breaking Bread right here on YouTube. This episode is going to take a focus on a very important topic for families, individuals, and especially young people. We're going to be talking about bullying and what we can do about it. And my guest is Joe Salamone, the Executive Director of the Long Island Coalition Against Bullying. Joe, welcome. It's great to see you again.
Thanks, Paul. Good to see you, too.
Great.
Thanks for having me.
Anytime. So, what is the Long Island Coalition Against Bullying?
So, we are Long Island, the Long Island region's only nonprofit that's 100% focused on tackling this issue in Nassau and Suffolk County. Mm-hmm. 100% of what we do goes to just addressing that issue. Helping kids, families, and schools, mm-hmm. Combat it. We started 10 years ago, so this year was our 10-year anniversary. And we, it started as, based on my personal experience as being a bullied kid, mm-hmm. And just things that we still continue to see. So a group of us banded together and said more needed to be done about it, and that's what the impetus to creating mm-hmm. the organization was, and our programs and such have evolved over the last 10 years, but we really seek to be, the kind of one-stop shop, to address the issue.
So before we get into the specifics about the programs that the coalition provides to the community, how prevalent is this issue of bullying on Long Island, and to what extent has the dynamic changed with the introduction of the internet?
Good question. Prevalence-wise, our statistics that we collect over the last several years puts it at about one out of every two kids, grades 6 through 12, currently or have experienced it at some point.
That's half the population.
Yeah, those statistics trend a little higher than what most national stats show. So it's a pretty prevalent thing here. Mm-hmm. I actually think if we took it a step further and we examined some of the answers that the kids give us in a lot of our surveys and exit conversations we have with them after presentations, they kind of address bullying as something that just goes on so much that they're not even sure when it crosses lines and stuff. Mm-hmm. So I think if they were actually a little bit more educated and aware of it, mm-hmm. the prevalence might even be higher. But 50% is basically what we're dealing with now. As far as the internet, we talk about this all the time. I could go into a school and explain what my version of bullying looked like. Mm-hmm. You and I both dealt with, experiences of being picked on such through our course
absolutely.
Of our lives.
High school.
It's always been there. Frankly, to some extent, it probably will always be there. But the internet is what makes something never go away. It's 24 hours a day. It can't be shut off. It comes into the bedroom. It comes into every aspect of their life. Whereas, used to be, whatever happened was in school or whatever people witnessed, mm-hmm. but it wasn't something that followed them home.
Right.
They could get off the bus, close the door, and it was gone for the day. That's not the case anymore. And whatever happens always has a cyber component. A physical fight gets recorded, gets posted on Snapchat or TikTok. Verbal altercations, land on Snapchat and TikTok and things like that. So it's at the root of everything now, because it's the root of everything we do now, mm-hmm. even in adults. So it definitely exacerbates the issue for sure.
You said something that I find interesting, and that's the aggressive behavior or the bullying follows the child or the individual home because you can't turn off the internet. Because it's always there. But one really doesn't have to turn it on if they don't want to. But the kids, especially in the schools, have become so dependent upon the phones.
Right.
The iPhones and the Androids and everything else, that they have no downtime from this. It's constant. And why do you think the numbers on Long Island are higher than your national numbers?
I'm not entirely sure, to be really honest. We both know that Long Island is a very unique place. Mm-hmm. It's a unique place to do business. It's a unique place for nonprofits. I'm not entirely sure as to why. you know, some people think it's that bullying is kind of socioeconomically driven, and things of that nature. And to some degree it is, although I've been getting into a lot more discussions now that kind of about that, but it's not the way people necessarily think. It's not that kids from less affluent communities bully more or less, but you know, that's I'm kind of digressing. But when it goes comes to the internet, yeah, they don't have to turn it on. But in their world, it's so crucial to everything they do. It's how they communicate. It's essential to their social lives, you know, and the just the constant scrolling and the damage that it does and the comparing themselves to what they see and things like that. You know, it's difficult to get them to turn it off. It's frankly difficult for adults to do it sometimes, too. But, you know, it's such a core component of their life that, you know, asking them not to turn it on is like asking them to give up their arm.
It's become another entranceway, my opinion, to create havoc.
Yes.
You know, the more, look, I'm a guy who looks at the internet and we have a program that's on the internet. But, you know, at some point in time, I stop reading it. I shut down cable news. I stop looking, you know, at the news feeds online. Because who wants to deal with it, you know, 24 hours a day, given everything that's going on in the world? So your organization, 10 years nonprofit, you're out there in the schools doing community education and doing forums where kids could ask problems. What are some of the other services you provide?
We kind of break the organization down into micro and macro focus. Mm-hmm. The micro focus is addressing, allowing the community to contact us directly if they have a specific issue. And sometimes that includes just a basic conversation of, we were having dinner tonight and my kid mentioned this. You know, how do I navigate this? What do I do? Do I call the school right away? And, you know, so sometimes it's more of a parental counseling type thing where it's, you know, how do you handle that? You know, how do you handle the school positively? Those conversations often lead to our other components of more personal development. We have a network of mental health therapists that we've built across the island that we can connect families to. But in addition to connecting them to it, we'll also provide a $500 subsidy to help offset some of the initial costs. Mm. The other interesting thing about our network is that they're contractually bound to us to offer almost at what it equates to about a 50% discount if the referral's coming from us than it would if they picked off, you know, just picked up the phone and said, hey, I'd like to come see you. So it helps keep costs down for everybody. We also send care packages to younger kids that are specifically tailored toward the child that's going to open it. Not something we can make in advance. It's directed toward that person. And it's for two reasons. It's to give them a smile, but it's also something to keep the conversation going. Kids are much more likely to communicate more when, frankly, you give them stuff that makes them happier, changes their mind. So it's got an actual purpose behind it. It's not just we want to send free stuff to kids. The more macro, you know, education part of it is our work with the schools, which really has become essential. Because that's how we really are trying to shift the culture, change minds. Last year, we visited 209 classrooms, met with about 7,000 kids in 17 schools across 12 districts on the island. This year, all those numbers are poised to double. So, you know, we're proud of that work. And then more on the community side, doing things like we, in May of this year, we held a forum right here. Where we worked with superintendents to better educate them on the Dignity Act and how to use that to not only help kids, but also help themselves. So, you know, we're trying to do our best.
When you meet with the faculty and staff at the schools, what are some of the concerns that they're bringing to your attention?
It's usually always, what do we do about the social media? But, you know, everybody's asking that question. The other question usually is expressing concern over what they interpret as the lack of understanding about what is bullying and what is not bullying. Because bullying is very specific. It's an imbalance of power. It's specifically targeting one person. Most of what goes on in kids' lives are more conflict-based. There's, you know, they're kind of on an even playing ground, a kind of a seesaw. They kind of, one does something, the other one retaliates. In a traditional bullying situation, there's little retaliation because it's being done to them, and they're afraid to speak up. Unfortunately, a lot of the community thinks that when somebody says something, you know, off color or inappropriate, that that's somehow bullying. And that's kind of become a buzzword. So the concern they have is, we get all the time, you know, are my kids being bullied? You need to do something about it. it's not always as clean cut as that, and that's definitely a frustration that you know schools have, is the community largely thinks that almost everything is bullying. Mm-hmm. When they try to address it with the school says, well, we could definitely look into this, but it's not rising to the levels of what it needs to be in order to be classified as
bullying. What does it have to do to rise to the level where you or one of your staff would say, this is bullying?
It usually starts from a conflict where there mm-hmm. is back and forth, and then that conflict quickly, you know, can escalate to everybody else has moved on, and maybe one person is still kind of, you know, really going after
the
one
aggressor.
Person. The aggressor, yeah. But it doesn't always have to come from conflict. You know, kids get bullied for a myriad of reasons. You know, when it was happening to me, I was the new kid, the quiet kid, the kid everybody thought was gay, you know, anything. And I had a question from a student last week. What did you do to you know, why were they bullying? What, you know, it's not up to us. We're not the ones choosing the why. It's not like, you know, I get bullied because I'm wearing a green shirt today. Mm-hmm. I'll go home, change the shirt. They'll find something else to target me over. So bullying rises with three components. It needs to be a repetitious action, not constantly name calling. It just needs to be one target and the aggressor. The aggressor can change the tactics, but the participants in mm-hmm. it stay the same. That naturally causes an imbalance of power where one person feels less than the other person, mm-hmm. which is why there's less retaliation. And that usually creates a scenario where it's based upon the intention to cause harm, where it's being done not for a joke, it's not being done to tease. They know what they're doing is causing an impact, and that's the hope mm-hmm. they're trying to get out of it. So when we see those three things, you know, are they always all three present along the way? Not all the time. You definitely get the kids who say, I didn't mean to do that. Mm-hmm. And if it was once, maybe you didn't mean to do it. But if you knew you didn't, that plane didn't land quite the way you wanted, that joke didn't land the way you wanted, why would you try it again? So things like that.
Let me ask you a question, because we have two questions. The victim.
Yeah.
The one who's being bullied or abused by another individual, and let's keep it in the school for a second.
Sure.
You said it best, the quiet kid. There are children, high school students who are still children, who are quiet, who may be questioning their sexuality, who may look different. When I was in high school, I had hair down to here. I was the hippie. That's who they referred to me as, the hippie. And I got picked on for being different looking. But here's my question. So it starts with the verbal abuse, the calling out the child, criticizing them, making them feel inferior to their own classmates or even to the whole school. Then, because of what you said about the internet, the problem goes home with them. It can exacerbate at home because the individual who's being bullied doesn't stay off the social media pages. Instead of shutting it down and not dealing with it, they're watching all the comments, they're watching all the, you know, the videos people are putting on. What portion of that, since you know so much about this, turns violent?
Statistically, I don't have a mm-hmm. statistical answer. What I will say is we are definitely seeing a dramatic rise in violent escalations to situations. I believe in the early 90s, I think more than the large portion of school shootings were done at the hands of kids who had mm-hmm. documented issues with bullying.
Starting with Columbine.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. That's the best example. But back here in our own communities, in March of this year, we had a 12-year-old stab another 12-year-old or 13-year-old in the hallway of Lindenhurst Middle School. We had a kid bring a box cutter into past security mm-hmm. in Oceanside. Riverhead, this is all in 1 week, by the way. Mm-hmm. Riverhead, a group of kids followed a kid home from school and jumped him at knife point. So the interesting thing to your question is when you ask the kids to say, cyber, verbal, emotional, and physical bullying, which one do you see more often? Physical is usually way down here. But mm-hmm. when you actually bring out the examples, physical bullying is actually, you know, it's not necessarily prevalent, mm-hmm. but it isn't gone by any stretch. So, you know, the the lengths that they're go to now are definitely more than they used to. Like, to your point, it used to be name calling. Now it's, you know, calling telling your parents that you think a kid is bringing a gun to school, because that's the way you want to bully him, to get him labeled as that. And then it's thus kind of filing a false report with the police. Mm-hmm. And it's not thinking from, you know, A to B and how much trouble you could get into just by making that up, you know. So there's definitely an escalation to the tactics, for sure.
The parents of the children who are victims, what are they telling you? What are they looking for? Because they're getting fed up with the schools, I think.
They are. But there are a lot more parents who are actually saying, listen, the problem's not going away for my child, but the school is doing what they can.
Okay.
That's good to hear, because schools do have their limitations. The other issue is the purview of a school is so much wider now. It used to be, you know, back in our days, it used to be if it didn't happen in school, the school couldn't really touch it.
Right.
Now, if there's a reasonable expectation that the issue out there can cause a problem inside the building, the school has, you know, some jurisdiction. So they are saying that the schools are generally helpful, which is good. But, you know, they're looking for some kind of a magic wand. Nobody wants to see their kids in pain, which, you know, unfortunately, nobody can give them that magic wand, you know.
And I'm not even sure that for those families who feel, let me take my child out of the school, put them into private school, put them into religious school, I'm not even sure that can help. We are about to run out of time, so I need to ask you these two things quickly.
Yes.
How do people get in touch with you if they need your services and help?
So our phone number is 516-777-7709. Our website is licab.org. They could email us confidentially for help at help@licab.org. Pretty soon, come January, we're going to have an interactive chat on the website,
so they could just
do it right from the website. Mm-hmm. So those are the really key areas to get in touch with us.
And if people in the community wanted to support the organization with a donation, same website?
Same website, yes. And we would be grateful for it.
Thank you, Joe. It's really been a pleasure.
Thank you.
Well, I'm so happy that you've all joined us in this episode, and so grateful that Joe Salamone from the Long Island Coalition Against Bullying has joined us as well. If you like what you're watching, then please go ahead and subscribe to Breaking Bread right here on YouTube. We'd love to have you as part of the family. Until next time, this is Paul Pachter, President and CEO of Long Island Cares. Go out and treat each other well. See ya.